Right, we're still in 2 Chronicles chapter 15, studying about King Asa and what was going on in the kingdom of Judah during the time of his reign as king, which was a lengthy reign. And we've seen that it is has been a reign that has been highlighted by his and the kingdoms, that is the southern kingdoms, obedience to the Lord, as they have been seeking him. And in chapter 15, at the point where we're studying now, they have entered into a covenant that they would seek the Lord with all of their heart and mind and soul, and whoever would not do so was going to be put to death, whether small or great, man or woman. That was in verses 12 and 13. And so verses 14 and 15 then recorded the response of the people to that, and how they sincerely and joyfully entered into that covenant. So this was one where Hezekiah was not, Asa was not merely compelling them to do something that they only did because they had to. We even touched on the aspect of this that involved their worship to God, and compared it to, we saw a very similar situation that we'll get to look at, Lord willing, in more detail when we get to chapter 29 in 2 Chronicles, during the reign of Hezekiah, when he came in and became king. It was similar to when Asa became king, in that each of them acceded to the throne of Judah at a time when the nation previously or immediately prior to their becoming king had not been serving the Lord like they should. They followed, their fathers were both wicked. So then they came in, and both Asa and Hezekiah served the Lord in spite of what their fathers had done and what the people had been doing beforehand. And each of them, as part of their work in leading the nation and turning them back to God, each of them caused the people to enter into a covenant that they would seek and that they would serve the Lord with all of their heart. And in both cases, the people responded and did so. We looked at a couple of those verses from 2 Chronicles 29 last week. Very, very similar. And they also involved, as we saw in 2 Chronicles 29, as part of their worship to God, the use of the mechanical instruments of music. But one of the things that we noted in looking at that was that that was not something that they came up with on their own. They had God's authority. In fact, it plainly states there in 2 Chronicles 29 that going back to David's time, through Nathan and Gad and David himself, God had given that commandment for them to do that. So they had a commandment to use those instruments in their, as part of their worship of God, which they invoked on these occasions. That does not give justification or authority for using them today. So we were making that point as we saw that particular situation brought up there in both of those cases, in 2 Chronicles 15 and in 2 Chronicles 29. But before we move on from there, there's one other king, another righteous king of Judah that we want to compare this situation to. And and it's not hard to narrow it down, because as we've noted before, there are only four kings that reigned over Judah that that we're told about that served the Lord and walked in the ways of David. And that means ones that did not end up rejecting him like a few did. Like we've already seen with Rehoboam, Solomon's son. He walked right for 3 years and then forsook the Lord, and he didn't repent. The ones that did serve the Lord and followed in the steps of David during their reigns as king, there were only four This is the first one here, Asa, and then his son Jehoshaphat will be next, and then Hezekiah and Josiah, and that's it. So with Asa, now his son Jehoshaphat, he'll be the next king, and he served the Lord. So we're just writing up the four and only four kings, and this isn't just over Judah. We can also add in all the kings of Israel, the northern kingdom, because none of them served the Lord, from Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, all the way to Hosea. All 19 of their kings walked in the ways of Jeroboam. Of course, Jeroboam walked in the ways of Jeroboam. He was Jeroboam, but all the rest of them after him did the same, and none of them repented. So there were none of the northern kings of the northern kingdom were righteous, and there were only four in Judah, and there they are. There's the difference between Jehoshaphat and the other three. Jehoshaphat was the only one of these four that became king after a righteous king before him. He was the only one that had a righteous father of those four. So we're not going to see Jehoshaphat having to cause the nation to enter into a covenant like Asa's doing here in 2 Chronicles 15. Why not? Because they already had. So he was merely continuing with what was going on from his father's reign. So that was a real blessing for him and for the kingdom. And that's why this section that we're studying right now, I mean, it's the only time in the entire history of the kings after David and Solomon, it's the only other time, because we had David and Solomon, father and son, that were righteous. This is the only other time where we're going to have that, a father and son, both righteous, reigning as kings in Israel. The only other time. All the rest of the time, the only other two times where you have righteous kings, they entered in like Asa. And so that's what these three have in common, is that all three, Asa, Hezekiah, Josiah, became kings after their fathers, who were wicked, had died, and the nation had been serving idols and not been obeying God like they should. And so each of these three are going to cause the people and make the people enter into a covenant that they're going to serve the Lord and obey Him. That's what we're seeing here in 2 Chronicles 15 with Asa. So this is 2 Chronicles 15. And then Hezekiah, that's in 2 Chronicles 29, as we've seen. But the other one that we want to compare this to is 2 Chronicles 34, where the same thing happens in Josiah's time. We can see it happens all three times for the same reasons. This is part of their work to get their nation, their kingdom, to follow God as they're attempting to. So let's go to 2 Chronicles chapter 34 now, and we can compare this to what we've already seen here in chapter 15 and what we also saw in chapter 29 with Asa and Hezekiah. But let's see how this plays out when Josiah's king. I mean, he came in after his father Amon had a brief reign, much like Asa's father Abijah. His reign was not a lengthy one, but they weren't righteous. So Josiah was trying to, and actually what Josiah was trying to do went back even to his grandfather Manasseh, who had been wicked for, reigned a long time over Judah, and had caused the practice. Hezekiah's father Ahaz is the one that introduced the practice of sacrificing their children making a burnt offering of their children to Molech. Wicked practice was a part of what the nations around them did, especially Ammon, people of Ammon. But that was brought into Judah by Ahaz, Hezekiah's father. He did that with his children. Obviously not Hezekiah, but that was something that he was the first one to start that in Judah. But then Manasseh, Josiah's grandfather, made that a widespread practice, and until it says Jerusalem was filled with innocent blood, that God refused to pardon the whole city of Jerusalem, and Manasseh's king Judah turned to that practice, and that was a horrible time. The Lord said it didn't even enter into his mind that they were going to go to that extent in their wickedness as a nation. Manasseh then repented late in his time, and he tried to get the people to stop. He did everything he could. He did sincerely repent, and he stopped his wickedness and tried to get the people to, but he was unable to bring the people along. And his own son was wicked. That was Josiah's father. So Josiah comes in on the heels of all of that, and he was the one that we've already seen his name brought up in our study. Does anybody remember where and why, under what circumstance? We've already read about Josiah. We haven't gotten to Josiah, but we've read about him. Do you remember it back when we were looking at 1 Kings chapter 13, when God sent that that young prophet to Bethel, where Jeroboam the son of Nebat was, that altar that he had made in Bethel with one of the golden calves placed there that he had made with those priests that he had made, and he was in the act of worshiping there at that altar, all of that unauthorized by God, violating, not some of it was just, it was sinful because they were doing things that God hadn't authorized, like having priests of other tribes, of the lowest of the people. But there were the first two of the Ten Commandments he blatantly broke. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image. Well, he made those golden calves, put one in Bethel, and said, these be your gods, O Israel, that brought you up out of the land of Egypt. So he committed many sins in all of that, which is what the latter half of 1 Kings chapter 12 goes into much detail about. But then in chapter 13, God sent a young prophet there to Bethel to prophesy against Jeroboam and that altar when Jeroboam was in the very act of committing his sins there. He prophesied against the altar, O altar, altar. What did he prophesy as part of that? The bones of those priests that were not legitimate priests were going to be burnt on that altar. There was going to be a man that was going to come along, and it was going to be almost 200 years later when it was fulfilled, that was going to break down, destroy that altar, burn those the bones of those priests who had been buried there in that vicinity. He was going to get rid of all of that. But that was foretold in 1 Kings 13. And it becomes very interesting. It didn't just prophesy there was going to be some guy that was going to do that. It even says his name would be Josiah. And he was the one. That's actually going to, we'll bring that up again in a short moment, Lord willing, in chapter 15, as we're reading about Asa, because it's going to tell us that there were some high places. Solomon made high places for all of his wives. Some of those endured all the way to the time of Josiah. So even though Asa was trying to clean things up, got rid of all the idols that he could, Hezekiah does the same thing when he becomes king. Josiah does when he becomes king, but Josiah was the one that not only did that, but he even was finally got rid of the high places that went all the way back to Solomon's time. That's just telling us what was going on when Josiah became king. So as far as a zeal for keeping the Lord's commandments, and that's the Lord's testimony about Josiah, he gave a similar testimony about Hezekiah and Josiah. He said there was none of the kings before Hezekiah or after him in Judah trusted the Lord like Hezekiah did. So when we are looking for an example of trust in the Lord, and we think about what happened in his reign when the Assyrians came in conquered all of his cities, his entire kingdom, and surrounded his city of Jerusalem. That was all that was left. They'd already taken over the northern kingdom and led them into captivity. So of all of Israel, Hezekiah was now confined to his city, surrounded by these mighty Assyrians. And if there was going to be a time in which a man was going to, if his faith was going to break, and he wasn't going to trust the Lord to get him out of what looked like a hopeless situation, that would have been it. But Hezekiah was steadfast and trusted God then, and encouraged all the people to continue to trust the Lord and rely upon him. And the Lord saved him. Remember how he did so? How did Hezekiah get rid of that mighty Assyrian army that was surrounding Jerusalem and had conquered all the land of Israel except for that one city? Well, he didn't. What did God do? Yeah, he sent his angel into their camp and smote 185,000 of their soldiers that night. In the morning, they were all dead corpses, it says. So God did that and got rid of them, but that was in response to Hezekiah's trust in the Lord. Josiah, the Lord testifies of him, that there were none of the kings in Judah that kept God's commandment, kept the law of Moses like Josiah had. So when we're looking from, and this would start, and this is not including David himself, this would be after David, from Rehoboam all the way to the end to Zedekiah. If you're looking for, and this would be of these four, which of the four had the greatest trust in the Lord? Hezekiah. Which of the four was most compliant and zealous for keeping every commandment in God's law? Josiah. And he's the one that finally gets rid of even those high places that had been in existence in Israel back to Solomon's time. There's many of those things that we just mentioned there that we're going to, we didn't go back and read all the scriptures, and that will take the rest of our class time, which, Lord willing, we'll get to all of that. Some of it we've already seen. But that's just really to set the stage for what we're going to read in these verses 28 to 33 here in 2 Chronicles 34, so that we understand what the situation is in Josiah's time when he comes in. So yeah, Asa and Hezekiah also came in at times when things were spiritually very bleak in their kingdom. But Josiah comes in at a time, and the time was worse before him than any of those others. And so he's dealing with a much worse situation. The people had been involved, they had been involved as a nation in the slaughtering of their own children and filling Jerusalem with the innocent blood of their own children in the years prior to Josiah becoming king of Judah. So these are the people that he's making to enter into this covenant to serve God. But let's read these verses, 28 to 33. Let's see, Brother Aaron, can you read that for us, please? 2 Chronicles 34, 28 to 33. Okay, now when we just read those verses, does that sound fairly similar to what we saw in chapter 15 with Asa and also in chapter 29 with Hezekiah? Looks the same, doesn't it? And he did make the people swear to that covenant. Did they do so? They did it. Now, we are going to be lacking in the statement here that from what we saw back in chapter 15, in verse 15. Remember, 2 Chronicles 15, 15, it says, all Judah rejoiced at the oath, for they had sworn with all their heart and sought him with their whole desire. And he was found of them, and the Lord gave them rest round about. We don't find a statement like that. That's not what's found in verse 34. It'd be excellent if that is what would happen in verse 34, would have a statement like that. But that's not what verse 34 says here. And there's not another verse like it. In fact, we do find some verses that say exactly the opposite. Even though Josiah made the people swear to do that, and they did so, did they do that? Did they rejoice at the oath? And does the Lord testify that they kept that oath with their whole heart? Was that what they... were they sincere? Did they repent? They did not. So let's go to Jeremiah chapter 3 to see that I'm not just making that up. This is what God says. So Jeremiah chapter 3, verses 6 through 10. And here's what the Lord testifies about this exact situation that we just read there in 2 Chronicles 34. Samuel, can you read that?
The Lord said, also,
so what time was this in verse 6? This is, of course, the book of Jeremiah. So Jeremiah was a prophet during this time. But in whose days did the Lord speak these words? Which king? Josiah. So he's speaking about the time that we were just reading about in 2 Chronicles 34. And what does he say about the people and what they were doing? He even compares them to the northern kingdom of Israel, because they had been around. I mean, where was the northern kingdom at this time under Josiah? It didn't exist anymore. It got put out of existence going back to Hezekiah's time. Well, Judah had that example of what their brethren in the north had done. That was also brought up by that prophet in 2 Chronicles 15 that the Lord sent to Asa during that time. How Israel was without the true God and was without God's law because they had forsaken him and rejected him. When that persisted all the way from Jeroboam the son of Nebat all the way through Hosea, until finally God sent the Assyrians against them and destroyed them and sent them away into captivity, never to return. Well, Judah had that example. So if you have your own brethren that you see, here's what they did, and here's what God did to them as a result. If there was one thing that you were going to determine not to do, what would it be? If you have any wisdom at all. Well, I'm not going to do that. I think most of us in here had siblings. And did we ever see one of our siblings do something and then... when the wrath of the parents came down, it's like you take notes. Okay, not going to do that right there. But what happened here? They didn't learn. They didn't learn. In fact, he says it did worse. Well, Josiah then made them swear they were going to serve God. But what does the Lord say about that in verse 10? Faintly, they were faking it. They said the words, but they didn't mean it. And they didn't. What's that?
They would, but they didn't.
Yeah, that's right. They said so, but they didn't. They didn't do so. So very different than what happens in Asa's time and also Hezekiah's time. So the first two times we see this, the people went along. They followed the king back to God. This time, Josiah is by himself. Now, he is the king. So we could ask him, well, why did they swear this oath that they really didn't mean it? Well, he had authority as king, and here's what they should be doing. And he tells them, now again, as we could see a little bit of that in the verses that we did read from 2 Chronicles 34, things had gotten so bad before Josiah had become king, under Manasseh and then his father Amon, under Josiah's grandfather and father. Now Hezekiah came in, remember when he became king under his father Ahaz, and who was the most wicked king of Judah that there was up to that time, the temple had been shut up. So the first thing that we read about Hezekiah doing is he opens the temple back up. So the worship of God had stopped before Hezekiah became king. So Asa, it wasn't that bad. When Hezekiah became king, the situation before him was worse than what it had been when Asa did. Well, what Josiah comes into is even worse still. Not only were they, in this case, they had lost the law. They had copies of it that was in the temple, but they had quit. People were supposed to be doing that on their own. The priests were supposed to be teaching that. They had that time during the year when it was supposed to be read before the people. None of that was going on. And they didn't even have, it had been lost. So it was Hilkiah the high priest, when they were doing renovation work in the temple that Josiah had commissioned. Then they found the scrolls with God's law. And how sad that was, that for many years before that, nobody was even reading God's word at all. And so that was found, and he read it, brought it before the king, and Josiah, that's when he rent his clothes, and then he caused that to be read before all the people. That's when he made them swear to that covenant that they were going to keep that law. So they weren't even reading it up to that point. But he said, you're going to keep that, and they swore to do so. They didn't mean it, but he's king, and he's a king with that zeal, as we talked about, that God said there was none like him before or after as far as his dedication to that law. Because once it was found and he knew what had been going on, and he had the full realization of all of their wickedness and why God's wrath was against them, he knew, understood the full extent of it. And he said, we're going to get back, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do every bit of it like God commanded. And he had that zeal to do so. Well, who in the nation was going to stand up and say, no, we're not following you in that, king? That none of them would do that. His zeal was such, and his authority that he had as king, that they didn't try to fight him on that. So they said the words. I think we can relate, as parents, the authority we have, and they're when our kids do something, we'll tell them you're sorry. They need to learn that they need to express their remorse for things. But can we force them to be sincere in their hearts? We have to teach them, but we can't make them be sincere in their hearts. So when they say those words, it's going to have to be up to them to mean those words. We have to teach them all those principles, but we can't make anybody else love God and serve God, can we? We cannot instill that. We can teach it, but we can't make somebody. Who can we control to make do what's right?
Ourselves.
And that's who we're going to be giving account of on the day of judgment. God's not going to hold me accountable for what somebody else has done or not done. Now, of course, to whatever extent God puts me in a position to teach or to influence others, if I don't do my job on that, it'll hold me accountable for that. But as far as the choices that are made by people in their lives, whether they're going to obey God's commandments or not. I mean, I'm going to have to answer for my decisions, my choices on that, and you will too. But God doesn't make us answer for the actions of somebody else. We have to give account of our own deeds, what we have done, whether they be good or bad. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 10. We're not going to be held accountable for other sins. The soul that sins, it shall die. Remember from Ezekiel 18, verse 4, we're going to be held accountable for ourselves. Somebody else isn't going to eat sour grapes and our teeth be set on edge as far as God's judgment is concerned. We can't control and force other people to do what's right. Josiah did everything he could, just like Asa and Hezekiah did. And he read the words to the people. He had the people taught what they should do. And he made them swear that they would do it. But they didn't do it. Is Josiah going to be condemned for that? Well, is Noah going to be condemned for the fact that only 7 people listened to him? No. I mean, he was a preacher of righteousness, it tells us in 2 Peter 2. He obeyed the Lord. He built the ark as the Lord said, and it was 100 years in preparing, and he was a preacher during that time. The warnings were issued. Nobody listened, only his family. But is Noah going to be blamed for the fact that nobody else would listen and do it? He did what he could. What's that?
Probably quite the opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's right. So... It's sad to read about how bad things had gotten in Judah, to the point where even when they're given a king as righteous as Josiah, that the people would not listen anymore. Not just that. What about Josiah's own children? Who were the kings after Josiah? 3 sons and 1 grandson. Jehoahaz, his eldest, and then Jehoiakim. And then, who's also known as Jeconiah or Coniah. And then his Zedekiah, so who was the last king. In between Jehoiakim and Zedekiah was Jehoiachin. Now that's the Jeconiah, Coniah. But he was the grandson, he was the son of Jehoiakim. And so he was Josiah's grandson. So he had a son, grandson, and then another son. So the last 4 kings of Judah after Josiah were 3 sons and 1 of his grandsons. And what does it say about all 4 of them? They're all wicked. So Josiah could not force his nation, his kingdom to serve him. He couldn't even get his own children and grandson to do that. When we read about all that, it's very sad from that standpoint that that's how bad it had gotten, that... Well, he understood what he needed to do, and he made the right choice and did so sincerely with all of his heart. But he couldn't persuade even his own family to do it. So that's how bad it was under Josiah. So at least what we're reading in 2 Chronicles 15 in Asa's time, at least we have the good news that when Asa is seeking God and this prophet comes to encourage him to continue that and all of the nation with him, that they're all with him in it. And so you have the whole kingdom together in this. And so this is a joyous time in Judah when all the people are determined to serve God with all of their heart, soul, mind, and strength. And they are putting that into action. And so they are, by the Lord's own testimony there in 2 Chronicles 15:15, that they did seek him with their whole desire. And there aren't many times that we read God testifying about the people of Israel like that. Now granted, this is Judah and Benjamin. The other 10 tribes, as the prophet had mentioned earlier in the chapter, they were without the true God and his law by their own choice. But at least this much of Israel, this kingdom, was seeking the Lord with their whole desire. We don't see God testifying of that many of his people doing that very often. These points are few and far between. Now, it should be the rule, shouldn't it? I mean, this is what we should be. This is God's people. This should be what was happening all the time. I mean, from going back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, this should have been the case with them from that point all the way through. But sadly, as we know, it isn't. So there are these brief times when we find God's people actually doing what they should do and serving Him like they should. So when we do find these points like this, it's very good to read about. Okay, so after verse 15, let's get back to 2 Chronicles 15. Let's read these last four verses of the chapter, verses 16 through 19. Let's see, Brother Trey, can you read that for us, please? Okay, so there's a summary of the remainder of his reign and what's going on here. This matches up with a lot of what we did read in those verses in 1 Kings 15, verses 8 to 24, that summarize Asa's reign. So it's actually these four verses in the next chapter, chapter 16, that's going to be what lines up with the part that we already read earlier in 1 Kings 15, verses 8 to 24. About Asa and his reign over Judah, because it's going to tie into Baasha's reign over Israel. So that's what the next chapter is going to be focusing on. But also this this bit about his mother Maacah. We also read about that in 1 Kings chapter 15, that he removed his own mother from being queen because she had an idol. So there is God's testimony to Asa's sincerity in following this this oath. So when the prophet comes to encourage them to draw near to God, to seek Him, when he said that the Lord is with you while you be with Him, and if you seek Him, He will be found of you, but if you forsake Him, He will forsake you. Well, we can see how seriously Asa took that with all the people from that encouragement. They swore they were going to do so, and it says they did. And how far was Asa willing to carry that? All the way to when he was having to stand against his own mother, who was doing wickedly. So if that would be among the most difficult situations to be in, wouldn't it? When you have your own mother that's not doing right, and then you have to choose to take an action against your own mother. I mean, that now there are plenty of people that take actions against their mothers because they're wicked. This is a different situation. This is a case where the mother was doing wickedly. But that would be a very an awful thing to have to face. But he did. That was the situation he was in. So he had to make that choice. We went over that back in chapter 15. So without repeating everything we went over then, I mean, it came down to the same choice we all have to make. Who's our master? And it can only be one. It can be the Lord, and it can be no one else. If the choice comes, to do the Lord's will means I have to stand up against my own mother. Well, if that's what the choice comes down to, then the choice had better be made the Lord other than our mother, because our mother can't be our master in that sense, or anybody else, including ourselves or anything else. It has to be the Lord and the Lord only. Asa was put to the test on that, and he passed the test. So he was willing to put his own mother out. And he took her idol, and he stamped it and burnt it there at the brook Kidron. So it doesn't tell us anything more about his mother. We could only hope that for her sake that Something got through to her before it was too late for her soul, but whatever happened after that, when she was persisting in that idol worship, he took her out as queen, and he got rid of her idol for her. All right, so verse 17 then says that the high places were not taken away out of Israel. So there were, and we know Solomon had many that were built. Now, they used those high places. That had been a place where idols were used. Now, what do we already know about Asa as far as the idols themselves? Was he allowing those places to be used, the idols to be, the idol worshiping to continue to go on there? No. But he left those places, at least some of them. And it mentions that because this comes up, it'll be mentioned again in Hezekiah's time, all the way to Josiah's time, because we're going to see he's the one that gets rid of everything, every remnant or vestige of rebellion against God, idolatry, and anything else. And not only in Judah, but Josiah is going to go through all the land of Israel, even that which had previously been occupied by, been under the northern kingdom, those other 10 tribes that were now gone. But he's going to go through there and get every bit of it, all the territory that God had given to Israel, intended for them all, even though that he didn't reign over all of it. He still got rid, and that's why he went up to Bethel and finally got rid of all those remnants of the wickedness that had gone back to the days of Jeroboam the son of Nebat. So Josiah is going to take it that far. He's going to clean up everything in all of Israel. But again, sadly, he's pretty much alone in that. But he did what he could. So Asa, it says in verse 17 at the end, in spite of the fact that he didn't have all those high places removed, it says, nevertheless, the heart of Asa was perfect in all of his days. This is not the word, the Hebrew word, tam, or we'll read tamam. I mean, it's in one of the two forms. That's the Hebrew word that means complete. It's the word that's used for Job, that Job was perfect and upright. He feared God and eschewed evil. Job was Tom. He was complete. That's the word that is the synonym for the New Testament word. There are two in Greek. Mostly it's teleos is the Greek word that means the same thing, to be complete. There's another word, katartizo, that is a synonym of that as well. Not used, artios is the form without the prefix. But anyway, there are two words in Greek that mean complete. So as far as the Hebrew language, which we're studying right now, tam is that word. This is the word salem. It's a form of the word shalom, which is the word for peace. So his heart, when it's speaking about Asa's heart here, it doesn't say his heart was complete all of his days. Well, whose heart is complete all of their days? You have to grow to that, don't you? I mean, that's the goal in spiritual growth. Now, Job reached that goal, as we're all striving for that goal. But does it say that Job was he complete all of his days, or did he grow to be that? Yeah, he grew to be that. But this is talking about Asa's standing with God. His heart was at peace, is literally what that word means. Peace or safety with the Lord. So just pointing that out, because this is not the actual word that means complete. It's not using that word to describe him there. Nevertheless, it's a good testimony about Asa and the life that he lived. Then it tells us in verse 18, that he brought into the temple the things that his father had dedicated. Well, that was Abijah. Well, wait a minute. I thought Abijah had said that he did not keep the Lord's commandments. Well, he didn't. But he still had he had a religion. He did. There was some religion in Abijah. In fact, we saw Abijah testifying about that when he was facing off against Jeroboam, and he told Jeroboam, "You don't have the right. You don't have the temple like we do. You don't have the priests like we do. We're doing what God says." So there was at least some understanding in him, and he had some allegiance to some of the traditions and recognizing, well, that was the right thing to do. And it tells right here that there were things that he had dedicated to be put in that temple for the Lord. But did that mean he was keeping God's commandments? It says he didn't. So is it possible to have a belief in God, to even have some kind of allegiance to some of God's traditions and some of the things that God says, but not have your life lived for the Creator? Well, what's going on in a lot of places right now, in Colombia and many other places in South Carolina, our country, around the world on this day? Are there any people that are gathering together with that same frame of mind? Really, they have some, they believe in God, they believe in Jesus, and they believe some of the things that are what's taught in the Bible that they will profess to believe and follow, but they're really not following it. I mean, that's not an unusual thing at all, is it? Again, is being religious, is that the standard that God gives us, that as long as we meet whatever that standard is, that we're religious, that means we're going to be, we're going to have eternal life? No. Abijah would have made it if that were the case. Well, how do we make it? We have to keep his commandments. We can't just believe some of it. We have to do it. So the fact that he dedicated some things to be put in the temple for God, well, good for him. But I mean, was that gonna save his soul that he did that? No. But it tells us that Asa did bring those things in, and he himself dedicated silver and gold in vessels. Then there was no more war, it says, until the 35th year of his reign. And actually, if we didn't have what we're going to read about in chapter 16, then everything that we would read about Asa would be pretty much positive. But the fact is, Asa was a man, and he was subject to temptation. And even though he passed a lot of his tests, did he pass them all? No. And the next chapter is going to mention two failures on his part. We can learn from, but we don't have time to do it now. So, Lord willing, we will start chapter 16 here in 2 Chronicles, and this will be the last one. It's not a long chapter, 14 verses. It's going to tell us about, some of it's going to parallel, a lot of it's going to parallel the information that's in 1 Kings chapter 15 that involves Baasha when he came against Judah and built up Ramah, and then Asa went in to the king of Syria for his help to break his alliance with the king of Israel, which he did. That helped him. But the fact that he went to the king of Syria instead of God, as we'd seen before when he was facing the Ethiopians, he went to the Lord, but he doesn't here. And then he's going to do that awful thing of when he was sick, going to a doctor. At any rate, we will, Lord willing, get a chance to look at, and I'll go ahead and preview that. It's not going to teach that we should never go to a doctor, but it is going to teach some important lessons about our trust in the Lord and who our faith is in. So that will be the main focus in chapter 16 that we will, Lord willing, begin to look at next week.